Today on the podcast, we'll be talking about the political spectrum. Is it real? I'm Ed Martin.
And I'm Alex Kane. And this is The Bipartisans. So, as today is our first podcast, we would like to discuss the political spectrum, or the lack of political spectrum, and where we align ourselves on this left-to-right debate. So, we've pulled up an image from the internet entitled The Political Spectrum, and it says, from the left-to-right political spectrum. So, on the left wing, we have anarchism, communism, socialism, liberalism, and then to the right side, we have conservatism, monarchism, Nazism, and fascism. So, what do you think about this, Ed?
It makes no sense.
I agree.
Why is anarchy next to communism? And why is fascism right wing?
I don't know. This brings in the whole debate of how this spectrum was even created and what it's supposed to mean. What do you have to say on that?
Well, I would think that right, the more right you are, the smaller government you'd want. And the smallest government you can have is no government. So that would be anarchy. And the left, I would think, would the furthest left, not the normal left, but the furthest left at the extreme would want fascism. So it doesn't make much sense to me. And I think this is where the issue comes in, because how do you define yourself on a political spectrum when everyone has a different definition of each of these things?
I mean, exactly. To your point, it has Nazism as the second most right-wing government, when Nazism literally stands for the National Socialist Party. So how is that supposed to be far right of actual socialism on the spectrum, when it's really just socialism with a bunch of racism mixed in? So I don't see how this spectrum is to make any sense. But do you believe, Ed, that there is any sort of political spectrum that makes sense to define ourselves on?
I mean, I think the idea of having... No, because I think the idea of trying to separate left and right is kind of dumb, because then you're trying to subscribe to a single ideology when you can really be mixed all over on different issues. So it's not extremely helpful. I think this is part of the issue that we're getting in today, where people feel obligated towards a party, and that sets them up not to really look at a full issue.
Yeah, exactly. So in addition to this linear spectrum, I also looked into more of the multidimensional ones, and they are far more confusing. I can't even begin to understand half of them, but I took a quiz online.
Wow, accurate.
And yes, very accurate. And it told me I was a center-left moderate social libertarian. I have no clue what half those words mean, and I do not know what they mean in that order. So I really think that actually putting myself anywhere on the political spectrum did me no good. Have you taken any of these things?
I have. They've put me at a moderate right, which I would say I'm more center-right than moderate right, but, you know, once again, this comes down to, like, we each have our own definitions of what right is. And it's also based off of what all these quizzes have, kind of questions that sort of set you up to be kind of in one or another. And they don't actually make sense. Some of them are kind of trying to push you towards being towards one party by giving, like, kind of a negative bias towards the questions. So if you answer it a certain way, it would make the right side seem bad, or the left side seem bad. I've taken one, I think, possibly by Pew, that was very biased in their questioning, and it made any kind of right view seem almost evil.
Yeah, like in this one I took it, one of the questions, you had to rank them all from strongly disagree to strongly agree, and the questions would be like, I feel that abortion should be banned in every single case, or some of them would be like, I think patriotism is an evil, or something like that. And they kind of just were, they're very pointed questions. And I know this is attacking one internet quiz I took, but I really think that defining yourself on the political spectrum just is, it's dividing in its own right or its own sense. And I don't think that's at all productive per political discussion. Now, that doesn't mean you shouldn't have political views. You definitely should. You just shouldn't align every single view with one side or another, or on some weird two-dimensional plot that has a bunch of colors in it and words that make not much sense, and like I did and Ed did at one point. So I really don't think that political spectrums are all they're made out to be. But as this political podcast is one where we will be coming at things from different angles, I think it is important to kind of define what our principal beliefs are and what we hold,
hold our traditional values to be. So, I mean, I think going off of that point, going back to Federalist Paper number 10, with James Madison, we'll link to it. But the idea was trying to convince people to subscribe to the whole Constitution idea of having a powerful central government. And really what he talks about is the rise of political factions. And is that dangerous? And to what extent? And so you can very clearly tell that there's a bad sentiment towards political parties and political factions. But it also... it is necessary. Madison defines it as a necessary evil. And I think that's important to keep in mind. I don't think we're against parties. I can't speak for you, Alex, but...
Well, I think, you know, politics isn't pure, so I think that I would not like to align myself to or subscribe to a political party going forward and say I'm with them on everything, but I think they are a necessary evil to get things done. Like, if you run as a member of the Green Party, like the great Dr. Jill Stein, you're not getting any votes, and no one knows what you're talking about, and you could agree with her.
She was a conspiracy theorist.
Yes, besides the fact that she was a conspiracy theorist, let's say you agreed with her on some things and you thought that Trump versus Hillary was like choosing between being poisoned and being sent to a guillotine, then I think that maybe...
Which is which?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't... I don't know.
No, now I gotta know, Alex.
I'd say that Hillary is being poisoned because you don't see it coming. Like, you see the guillotine, you know it's gonna be bad, and you know it's gonna be very out there, but poison, you're getting screwed over. But getting back to Dr. Jill Stein and all of her conspiracy theories, let's say that you thought that her ideas, some of them, were better than this pick-your-poison choice we had. Because of how the country is so divided by political parties and people don't actually think about the issues, no one paid attention to her besides people invested in politics. And they were smart enough to realize that she was a conspiracy theorist and believe that Harambe had political significance other than for animal rights activists. But I just...
Is that true?
Yes. Jill Stein told us that Harambe reminds us that we need to stand up for the forgotten and the abused because...
I think the important thing to remember here is that, like, I think parties in terms of organization are crucial to actually organize voters and to get them out. And in that way, I do think they're very helpful. Where I think they lack, and it's become more and more extreme with every election, is that people seem to think that their party is a team and each team has their own goals. While they do have their own goals, the end goal of both teams should be that the country gets better. And it really comes down to the disagreement of what is better. And I think when it comes down to this team mentality of I don't agree with you because you're Republican or because you're Democrat, that becomes toxic towards our political society.
Yes, definitely on that point. But how unified would you say these parties are today in their beliefs? Because
I think they're horribly unified, but they're only unified by their hatred of the other party.
Yeah, I'd agree on that. I think the right is kind of... I mean, people are going to think this sounds weird, but I think it's more inclusive of who is part of it, because you've got people all over the place, from Trump to people who are business people who think of limited government, don't really care about social issues. You got white nationalists when on the left you have kind of social justice warriors and a bunch of coastal people who...
I mean, it's mainly urban, like people who live in large metropolitan areas.
Like, just like, I mean, people people from the left flaunt the popular vote, but if you look at the map, the blue parts of the country in the 2016 presidential election
were
all concentrated, and throughout the country you just have this big patch of red. So it is more inclusive on the right. I think that means that their ideology is kind of spread out more, which I think is actually a good thing, because the left decides that it should be offended by everything, and it kind of focuses on a lot of social issues more than actual policy. And this is coming from someone who agrees with them on most things, but I think that the left of today is not really good at getting things done or knowing exactly what it stands for and making the lives of Americans better.
Yeah, and I think the right, their main shortcoming is they try to just destroy everything simply because it's left. And I think what lacks in our current political system is this idea of kind of having empirical ways to find out if a policy works or not. And I think that falls on both parties. You have something like Obamacare where it definitely has its shortcomings, and it probably would have gone better if we did a small control study in one state and saw how it worked, and then tried to implement it and fix it on a national level in a better way. But the issue with that is that since we only have possibly 2 years of one party in control, you don't know what's going to happen, because since neither side is committed towards actually making the country better as a whole, they're really just committed on making their side win. So if it can mean repealing something like Obamacare, they'll do it because it's a win for their party, not because they actually want to improve the system.
Yeah, that's like the cliched saying, those who don't learn history are deemed to repeat it. My freshman history teacher told me that the only example of that ever happening was Hitler charging into Russia and getting delayed at Stalingrad. As
you never invade the Russians.
Yes, it's a Napoleon made the mistake first, but I think that we have a wealth of history in the United States and throughout the world, and we have facts to analyze. We can test how things work, and we shouldn't repeat mistakes. We should learn what is good and what is bad through, like you said, empirical ways. And I think that means that it comes down to an issue by person and not a party that's so opposed to the other one, because the current state is of American politics is just a bit dysfunctional. We're in the middle of a shutdown. Recently ended shutdown. But it's just nothing gets passed, and it gets passed by a narrow margin just because one side likes to beat the other.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, I think to an extent, and this is kind of exiled legislation to go to the Supreme Court, which is another issue, I guess, for another day. But it's turned out that instead of just getting legislation passed by a majority in the House, instead we've turned to it ended up getting sued, something like Obamacare, to get sued to make sure it was a constitutional right, which is sort of an abuse of the legislative branch, and both sides are obviously guilty of this.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah. I did some research, and I looked up the Pew Research Center did a big study in 2014 about how people in the United States align themselves politically, and what we have is that almost 60% of the politically engaged people in this country are very partisan. So we have what they call steadfast conservatives, who are socially conservative populists, which mean basically they're very critical of government, they're very socially conservative on most issues. And then we also have business conservatives, which means they're very for limited government control in the economy, but they don't really care much about social issues, and they're pro-immigration. Then we have the solid liberals, who are basically liberal on everything. So all of these together make up almost 60% of the politically engaged, but only 36% of the general public, whereas you have a couple more categories that are less partisan, like younger people, a bunch of them. Well, this has 14% of the general public. They're conservative on some issues, liberal on others. You have people who are kind of skeptical of general government at all. You have people who are way out there on the left and all social issues and don't really care about the economy or anything else. And then you have kind of a religious group that aligns with the left and is kind of trying to be compassionate. So the majority of this, the country, is not that partisan, but it is a little to one side. But of the politically engaged, there is a majority that is partisan, and strongly partisan. So do you think this is an issue?
I once again, like, for organization reasons, I don't. But when it comes to issues, I think what a lot of people, I've met a lot of people who do this, who just, because Republicans or because Democrats agree with this, I agree with the two, without actually kind of digging into research. Because sometimes if you, and I think that's the whole point of this podcast, if you look from different views on certain issues, you'll end up changing your mind. There's one experiment that was conducted where they found that one of the most effective ways to actually change somebody's view on something was to have them write an argument against that thing. And it actually proved to be one of the most effective ways. So I think it is about looking at other sides, and that's how you really grasp other opinions, other perspectives, and actually you're able to either compare it to your own and figure out, well, no, that person's being illogical, or say, well, actually, I understand where that person's coming from.
Yeah. I mean, that's why we're here. We're here to debate and kind of get our own ideas stronger, but really, really challenge each other to bring empirical evidence to the table to see what works best. Now, at the beginning, we kind of completely trashed political spectrums very quickly, but I would like to hear, if I had to ask you how you would, I know you kind of briefly went over this, but how you would align yourself politically. You don't have to use any spectrums, just kind of summary of your political beliefs and political philosophy.
Okay, well, I believe I'm kind of a not strict constructionist, but loose constructionist, in that I think we should really stick to the Constitution. In that way, I'm in favor of more so states' rights on certain things. But then there are other things that I think where the federal government has perfect power. But I think, once again, that's up to the that is up for debate in the Supreme Court, and that's up for the Supreme Court to decide. The other thing that I think, so I really do believe that the Constitution is a contract, and that it should be followed precisely. But I also think that in general, I'm pro-regulation, but not so much so that it struggles for growth, at least economically. But I think I don't know, in the general sense, I'm liberal in that, for freedom of, like, freedom of speech, I'm all about that. But I think that I would, like, put myself on center right, kind of, I don't know, on the spectrum, the general spectrum.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know where you put yourself.
Yeah, I would say that it kind of goes against what it said in the quiz, but I'd say that I'm more solid left. It's funny what you said about kind of being more about liberal freedoms, because kind of what is being liberal about freedoms, because like the right likes to say we're for personal liberty and things like that, but they're against things like gay marriage and legalization of marijuana, which you could argue are, you know, personal liberties. But,
well, and I think that's where the libertarians become, like, kind of interesting. I think that I fall in a lot of those issues just under libertarianism. Like, I just marijuana, for instance, I don't really think the state has a place for all that. And then comes in the argument, should they be kind of restricting any sort of, like, illegal or dangerous drug? And I don't really know. I think it comes to a point where children, possibly, but I don't know, if somebody wants to have crack and do that, I don't know, like, how who am I to decide, and who is anybody in the government to decide if that's the right choice for them?
Definitely. You can't have people going around just doing crack all willy-nilly, but
I don't know,
you need
maybe people, the country would be better, Alex.
That's a hard argument to make. But getting back to where I am on the non-existent political spectrum. I would say I'm solid left. So I am a believer in things like capitalism and the free market, but I think it needs government regulation so it doesn't get kind of too powerful on its own and lean its benefits all to a small portion of the country. But I don't think the regulation should go so far that it's hindering a strong economy. So that means I believe in a more progressive tax code and higher taxes for people who make more money, but that's as a means to provide for people who are less fortunate, which is another thing I care about as someone on the left. I know people on the right say that it's not the government's duty to provide for people who are less fortunate or become a welfare state, which is a legitimate concern, but I think that it benefits the entire country when people are given opportunity and being helped out. And obviously there can't be abuse of the system, but they need people who struggle need some help so that they can be a productive member of society and enjoy the liberty and freedom of the United States in their own right. Now that is the economic side of things. Generally, on terms of like things like freedom of speech and liberties, I would say that I'm pretty much almost libertarian on that, which is kind of weird because libertarianism is not really associated with the left, but I think that the government not infringing on people's will to do as they please, as long as it's not harmful to themselves or others, is really dangerous for our society and the future of our country. It's what we are trying to protect against in the Constitution as a form of overpowering and tyrannical government. So I know a lot of people on the left thinks that you should be able to police what people say and stop people from speaking, but it's a quote from Bill Maher, who I personally hate, but I think it's a good quote. Not so Maher. Whatever. Maher, Mayer, however you pronounce it. Anyways, it's that when you I don't remember the quote. It's when you expose things to light, you can see them more clearly and understand them better. So like a lot of people try to shut down far righters and white nationalists.
But if you actually listen to what they say,
if you listen to what they say,
it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous and stupid. And if
most people would disagree with her, and the idea that it could spread, I understand that. But if you police what people say, what it really comes down to is, well, if you stop hate speech, well, then what is hate speech, right? Because then whoever's in control gets to determine who's hate speech, and that's where the issue is.
Yeah, and also things become more desirable when they're banned. So you
prohibition
like
era,
yeah, prohibition speech. Area with people just free speech
more white supremacist.
Yeah, so I think, yeah.
I don't know if that's true. But
no, it's probably not true, but I think
people will be more willing.
I mean, white supremacists do have the opportunity to have rallies and things like that, and it seems
as long as
like
they're not directly invoking violence, I would say. And that's the argument against that. Like, what is not free speech is kind of anything that incites violence or is violent. And as long as you're not crossing that line, I think that if you're stupid and you have stupid views, it will become extremely clear.
Yeah. Yeah. Things, when you expose things, you see them clearer and you realize they're stupid and no one should listen to them. But when you ban them, they just become more desirable. Like you have Milo, however you pronounce it, Yiannopoulos' book, Dangerous, which is filled with a bunch of nonsense. I haven't read
it. Garbage.
It's garbage.
Wow.
I haven't read it because I don't want to waste my time doing that, but it's full of just a bunch of nonsense. I have read the editor's comments from Simon and Schuster before he was they dropped him because of his statements about pedophilia. But
Yeah, that was that wasn't good.
Yeah, but
once again, it showed his stupidity.
Yeah, if you read the comments, nothing he says has any basis for it, and he's just arguing to piss people off. Yeah. So I didn't read it, but it got banned from a lot of bookstores and like Barnes and Noble, and it still became the number one bestseller on Amazon and a New York Times bestseller. So if you ban it, people will read it. And but if you don't ban it, people will realize how stupid it is.
I think that's the reason happening with the Fire and Fury book, which actually wasn't banned at all, but it was filled with things that just actually didn't make sense.
Have you read it?
I have not read it, but I've read about it, kind of similar to you. And the quotes that I've heard from it just don't actually logically match up.
Yeah, I don't know too much about it, so I can't speak on it.
Well, all I know is it brought down Bannon, which I think there is a certain group who loves Bannon, but what's important to realize is he had no power to begin with, and this was really his downfall. But I think it's the same thing. It comes to this interesting point of, like, Antifa. And their rallies, you know, they say they're anti-fascist, but then they want to prohibit people from speaking, which makes no sense because that's the definition of fascism.
Exactly.
So I don't really understand what they're trying to get to. Having people only say things that agree with you is actually, I don't know, it's going to make us a stupid country if that's the way we're going.
And you get your cause just gets much more credibility if you are willing to listen to others and take them down. I mean, it makes you look scared if you don't listen to them, think about them, and just take them down and let people make their own decisions and take them down on their own.
Yeah, and I think this comes to it's a term that's used a lot by kind of right-wing people, but I think it does have an important, like, this idea of identity politics, of where your ideas are validated and they cannot be turned down because of who you are. And I don't really believe in that either. I think you can criticize anybody's views. It doesn't matter who they are. And I think that's an important component of free speech.
Yeah. No one is ever above criticism. It's one of the beauties of the United States. And I'm again, it's something I disagree with the left on. I'm against identity politics. I think that there should be representation in government of the population, but you shouldn't vote someone into office just because they're gay or transgender. You should vote them into office because they are qualified for the job. And that's why I'm personally against identity politics. And
I'm very interested to see if Chelsea Manning wins. Where is she running in Maryland?
Yes, Maryland.
Yeah, I don't really understand how a nearly convicted person of treason can run for office.
Yeah, that's my point, is that the left is trying to support her because, you know, they claim that she's transgender, she is persecuted and her ideas aren't taken seriously or something like that, but
you examine
the evidence, was almost convicted for treason, and she was only pardoned by Obama at the tail end of his presidency. You can't just gloss over that because you want to play identity politics.
And I think a similar character. This is like Ed Snowden, who I think is important to drag into it. He committed treason, and whether or not it was right, I actually agree with him for exposing it. I don't agree with the fact that he just ran to Russia, and I think this comes to politics with consequences. We should hold people accountable for things that they say and things that they do, and they should be ready to take the consequences of the actions that they take and the words that they say. And if you're not, then I would just say don't speak, because, and I'm not saying don't speak. This is an Antifa rally. But all I'm saying is be ready to, you know, accept the consequences of what you're saying.
Yep, words have consequences and so do actions.
An astute point, Alex.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, well, I think that'll be it for...
Oh, yes, that will be it for today.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much for putting up with us.
And the music credit goes to bensounds.com.
Great website. And hear us next time on The Bipartisans. And make sure to tune in twice a week and listen to all the great things we have to say. We promise it will always be entertaining, and we will have a lot of things to say, and you will never want to miss us. And our great intro music provided by bensounds.com. If you didn't get that, that's bensounds.com.
Bensounds.com.
Yes, one more time, bensounds.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Alex Kane.
And I'm Ed Martin.
And this was The Bipartisans.